Welcome to the High and Low Podcast. This is your host, Bravo, Bravo, Ducking Bravo. It's been a minute. We're back. We took a week unexpectedly off, but that's because I have a lot of things going on and I have to take care of people when they get sick. So much happened, both in the world of reality TV and there was an eclipse. I don't know who got to see that in totality. I was just off of the center of totality, so my view is a little different. It was magical. It was really powerful to just be, I was driving around at the time and I saw so many people just outside standing, looking up. I had extra glasses on me. And so I was actively taking my mother to like an urgent care place with, a small child with me. And there were people outside. And I remember one guy, I think it was like a UPS driver. He's like, "What does it look like?" And I was like, "Guess what? I got an extra pair." You know, and then anybody we come across, we went into the urgent care. The doctors didn't have glasses. I gave them glasses. So it was really fun to have the glasses and be able to hand them out to people. And so I don't know when another eclipse, I know it's going to be like 150 years before another one like that happens. But if another eclipse happens, period, I know now, have extra glasses on me because people don't think of it or forget them. That was just amazing, though, to see so many people outside all looking up at the sky and interested in our world. Any moment when we can be united by science is, I think, a good thing. So many people are deniers of basic facts of this universe, but an eclipse will bring us together. That's what I saw. Speaking of denying basic facts of the universe, Kristen Cavallari, okay, Cav, came out this week and said she does not wear SPF. She thinks the sun is good for you. And she had someone on her podcast that, you know, confirmed the sun is good for you. To which I say, do you wear, girl? Do you? More SPF for the rest of us. SPF is a very good idea. Several people in my family have had melanomas cut off of their skin, so I have and will be consistently using SPF 50 or above since I was in my early 20s. But to each their own. She's a raw dog in the sun and dating a man in his 20s. She's getting vitamin D everywhere she can. Something else that happened was Coachella Valley. It's going on right now, and there's a big to-do, a big crossover with Coachella and the Bravo Sphere. I posted on my stories. I saw it last night. I said, am I having a stroke? Am I hallucinating? Is this the first sign of something? What day is it? Do I know my name? Because there was video of Tavis, Taylor and Travis. She comes first in all things. So her name comes first. And I will die on that hill. Tavis. And there's video of them at Coachella, you know, being snuggly and adorable, and people are zooming in on them. But I'm like, what is that? I see someone else I recognize. And it was Luis Ruelas, the husband of Teresa Giudice. Teresa was in a very understated outfit. She was wearing a hot pink cowboy hat with stars on and a hot pink shirt. Her friend who was with her also had a hot pink cowboy hat and a hot pink shirt. And Louis, he's very easy to pick out of a crowd. Very easy to pick out of a crowd. And so I uploaded this video where you can just see them like barely in the foreground. And of course, my DMs are flooded with like, that's not Teresa. And I'm like, I know that's not Teresa. Teresa's right next to her. I'm zooming in on Louis. That means that she's there next to him. She was wearing that same outfit. Let's not do this. It's them. And it was them, because then Louis posted to his Instagram a clear as day picture, no Photoshop involved, of Teresa smiling with Taylor Swift. What a weird crossover. That's unexpected. Taylor is so nice. But they must have been all in this, you know, special VIP section, because I think the way Coachella works, let's go look it up. Won't it be fun? How much is it? Let's go see. There's VIP and there's general. Well, this is jarring. I'm on the Coachella page right now. And so it's across two weekends, April 12th through 14th, then also April 19th through 21st. And they're not that expensive. They're pretty cheap compared to BravoCon. Compared to BravoCon, they're giving these away. All right. So for general admission, across the two weekends, it's $500-ish per weekend. But then the area where Teresa and Louis and Tavis was, that's $1,000 for tier one and $1,200 to $1,300 for tier two. I'm sure they were tier two, let's just say. So $1,300 a ticket, honestly, for 2 days for that VIP experience where you get to see Taylor and Travis snuggling, that's not that bad, $1,300. All right, well, now I'm fascinated because now I've gotten into the camping bundles. So to sleep in a tent of your own is like $100. And it goes up from there. Bring your car, $200, blah, blah, blah. But now I'm looking at, they've got at this place called a lodge, Lake El Dorado Lodge, $3,200 for an 8x12x8 wood lodge, lockable door, 3 windows. Oh, and festival passes for 2 people. I'm sure it's just general admission. Anyway, this whole thing is interesting. As a former events person, I love looking into the details of this, but that's where they get you is the accommodation. 4,000, 6,000, it's all up in there. I mean, why not just sleep in your car at that point? It's kind of fun. It's a memory. Just all pile in like puppies in the back. It's fine. Okay, wait, hold on. Now we're into safari camping. The ultimate on-site camping experience, complete with guest passes, golf cart, and more. For 2 people, $11,000. So it runs the gamut. Sleep in your car for $100. Pay for a place with a little golf cart for $11,000. Whatever you want. It takes all kinds. Lana Del Rey's performance did look pretty cool. She came in on the back of a motorcycle. Throwback to a video she did in 2011. Looked pretty fun. But staying home is also fun. So there's that. When I was going through all kinds of stressful stuff and my mom was sick, she's fine now. But when she was sick and I was just like in the worst mood and I opened my phone and I saw that there are more rumors that Hillary from Boston had been in talks with Beverly Hills producers. I flipped out. I was like, I'm not going to go off in my stories. I just posted one thing, but I went off in real life. I was so heated about it. And then I started my period the next day. So it's like, you know what? We've all got our things that get under our skin. Things make sense. I was like, no wonder why that made me so mad. I was really about to fight somebody. But it does annoy me. And I will not watch it if they do cast her. There's already too few. Here we go. I'm getting on my soapbox. Hold on for a rant. There's already too few Latinas on Bravo. To bring on a woman who is cosplaying as a woman from Spain who cannot even speak English words. I'm not going to make this about me, okay, said Sheena. But I will say that my family was vilified for their accents, for speaking Spanish in public. That is why they never wanted me to learn Spanish. It is very upsetting to then see a woman from Boston be rewarded for pretending to be Spanish. And her children, who are also not Spanish, all have Spanish names like Leonardo, Carmen, Ricardo, Rafael, Romeo Alejandro. It's just, there's a lot going on over there. And if they want to do the Spanish cosplay, you know, for whatever that does for them, great. I don't want to see it anymore, but I'm not going to reward her with my eyeballs. So I will not be watching if they do follow Kyle again. Kyle casting for Beverly Hills saying, you should put Hillary from Boston on. She calls her children Baldwinitos. Isn't that so cute? No, she's not really from Spain, but isn't it fun to pretend? It turns Alec on. No, I don't want to be a part of this. So anyway, that's just me. That's what would cause me to boycott Beverly Hills, which I've already been close to several times in recent years due to Erica Girardi. But I reasoned to myself that victims are going to sue her at some point because a judge said that they could. And so she needs a few coins in her pocket in order to pay him. And it's fun to see her contradict herself. Now, speaking of boycotts, people are very, very fired up right now about Potomac. For anyone who has not been watching, they're in the middle of the reunion right now. It's a 3-parter. Part 2, the issue arose when, do you remember the fight? Look, okay, if you don't remember the fight, on my page, I'm going to post it to my stories. I did a slow-mo breakdown. There was footage released before the season even aired that someone took with their cell phone at a club of some kind or a bar. And it's, you know, it's dark in there. People are holding drinks. And Deborah approaches Candace, appears to throw a drink. Hands are thrown, things pop off, and all these women start fighting. And there's a woman in like a lime green or yellow dress who is really going hard, you know, during the fight, the kerfluffle. And people fall down a step. I was just like freaking out watching it because they get so close to truly hurting themselves because there are those metal bars that hold, you know, the rope when people are so important. You can't go in that area. They're too important. And they had those up and they fell kind of into them from a step, from a level up. Anyway, it could have been really bad and they're very lucky that people were not seriously injured, but it was a big fight. So I slow it down in my stories. I'll post it to my stories. And Giselle says that she puts blame on Candace, Wendy, Deborah, and the other person involved in the fight. Candace and Wendy throw a flag and they're like, oh no, you don't blame us for that. We didn't do anything. That woman, Deborah, approached us. She started this whole thing. And Wendy's like, why am I in it? You know? And then so Jizzy walks it back. She's like, okay, fine. Not you, Wendy, but definitely still you, Candace. And so I think having watched that, I think that probably did play into why Candace said that she's not coming back for next season. And people are very upset about it. For Giselle, who was not even there, to blame it on Candace when this other woman really instigated it. People feel like Giselle is protected by Bravo, that she gets to get away with horrible behavior. And why is she on stage telling Candace that it was her fault? Also, Andy, people are taking issue with Andy and him sort of letting that discussion go the way that it did and not jumping in. I don't think that she started it at all. And they're coming for her saying that she held a bottle up. Well, when the woman charged her, she reacted by like pulling back and having a bottle ready. But I think Candace actually would have done that? I don't. I really don't. And it's moot anyway. She didn't cock back and hit her with the bottle. She just kind of like took a stance. But again, I didn't watch the season religiously. I don't know the woman in the lime green. I know Deborah. I do think she's really thirsty and she probably played all of that up just trying to make a scene. But people have a right to boycott and it does work. So people are saying like, hey, that's it. I'm not watching. So tonight, Sunday night is part 3 of the Potomac reunion. And a lot of people saying they're not going to watch. And we will see when the ratings come back tomorrow. People are saying like, I'll hear about it another way. I'll watch somebody's recap. I'll hear something, but I'm not going to tune into Bravo and give them that time and those ratings. Which leads me to another point. A lot of people on Instagram are still asking me to recap the way I used to, where I, you know, give a thought, my thoughts on it, and I, you know, keep it moving and just show kind of like highlights of an episode. And I stopped putting as much time into that because I started doing the pod and it's like, you only got so many hours in the day. And so I might float the idea of doing that the old way. Oh God, I hate to even say it by subscription. Damn it. I never wanted to do that. Ever. I said in the beginning, like, I never want to take money from my online followers / friends. I don't want to do it that way. I want to get paid. If I ever get paid to do this, I would like to get paid from companies. And then you just hear an ad or me talking about something that I truly actually use and like, but I don't ask directly for people to do that. Other than like, you know, whenever I would do a huge, like 2-3 day long dive, I'd be like, if you want to give a tip, great. Here's my links to Venmo and buy me a coffee. But like, you're not obligated. It's here for you either way. And that was always nice when people would acknowledge the work that that takes. But I would really have to give something up in my personal life to be able to do the pod and the live recapping. So it's something I'm thinking about. It doesn't make me happy to think about it. I hate subscription stuff. I hate that everything in our life is like, give me $2. It's like death by 1,000 cuts. At the same time, I certainly follow people and do the subscription method. And I listen to other people's pods and stuff because I can't. I don't think any human being, well, there's probably a few, but they have nothing else going on, who can watch every single show themselves, every single one on Bravo and fully recap them all. There's no way. We divide and we conquer. Different accounts are into different shows. Different accounts recap different things in different frequencies because we got to divide and conquer on this. It's too much. So I absolutely listen to other people's recaps and other people's coverage of shows, and I'd be lost without it. We all would. We all have to listen to some recaps here and there because there's so much. Also, I forgot to say, when I was in the hospital with my mother, she just had pneumonia. She's fine, but it was dramatic for 2-3 days, which is why there was no pod. We were hanging out in a hospital for a long time, and so we got to watch a lot of Bravo. Bravo's always there for us in the darkest moments. I got to watch the Below Deck when Jill from New York was on and yelling about her Diet Cokes and pointing out things they could be doing better and requesting special food. And I thought she was the primary just from watching it because I didn't watch the one before it when they first got on the boat. So I'm like, wow, Jill really, she really has a lot of stuff going on, but she's not the primary. And so then they start neglecting the primary's needs and wants because they're worried about catering to Jill so much. And my mom called it. We're laying there, we're watching the TV, and she says, they're not going to tip well. People like that never do. And I was like, you're so right. The people who demand the most and seem to get off on people serving them are the people who do not tip. It almost, it's like they just think that the world should treat them that way as a baseline. And so they don't, I don't think, understand the lift that it takes, or they don't know how poor everyone is, or they don't care. I think it's a blend. It's a nice blend of all three of those. But either way, that charter, even in the middle of it, one of the people says, oh my gosh, I'm so tired. I can't imagine these people taking care of us. They're doing such a great job. And now after a whole day of like being out in the sun and the sea, they have to change their clothes and now make our evening great. So they acknowledged it in the moment. They're pretty much running these kids ragged, kids, young adult people, men, women, people, ragged. And they still left a tip of $20,000. If that seems like a lot to you, I'm sorry to burst the bubble here. That's $1,600 and something per member of the crew. That is not enough for them. They hope to get close to $2,000. So a good tip is like $30,000. People just need to build that in. Just build that in. If you can't afford to compensate these people who are running around getting you your 30 icy Diet Coke. She's like, put them in the freezer. Put them, I need them that cold. And I get it. You know, I've said it on this pod before. Back when I was a DDP ho and I drank my Diet Dr. Peppers every day, I'm cold turkey now. But you put one in the freezer? Meaning of life. So good. Those little crystals. It's almost like it's a drug I have to say no to every day. All right. I say yes to other ones now. I can't have the DDP anymore. I can't do it. So I understand Jill is what I'm saying. When she says, put it in the freezer, I say, amen. Set an egg timer. You don't want to leave it in there too long, but it's worth it. It's worth throwing the dice. That's how good it is. Somebody's going to explode a Coke in their freezer and they're going to blame it on me. Don't put that on me. And again, Bravo's so wonderful because later in the episode, they bring in a new stew. And she's from Australia and she knows Fraser because she dated a good friend of his. And so even though it didn't work out between them, Fraser's like, oh, I know she's amazing. She dated this great friend of mine. She was awesome. And so that's nice, good energy to start off with. But they don't like the third stew and I don't either. She's pulling some really passive aggressive stuff. Like she'll shut down and not talk to Fraser. You can't not talk on a ship like that. You have got to keep your lines of communication open, even if you hate the other person. Like things need to get done and there's not enough people to shut down and do the silent treatment. And this is coming from someone who loves a silent treatment, but you can't do it there. And the stew that's doing this, her name is Barbie, which is a shame because you want to like somebody named Barbie, or I did anyway, and I just didn't. So I think she ends up leaving. And Fraser said something that I totally agree with. People were like, oh, shouldn't you give her another chance? And he's like, no, after two charters, I know what you're about. I've seen your character. And I agree with him. I think after two charters, you know. And he's like, I've let things go on too long before in the past. And I knew I should have nipped it in the bud. I'm like, trust your instinct. You don't want to have somebody on a boat that's going to cause strife. And they sometimes do let people simmer for way too long. You know what? Sandy, she's guilty of that. She gives people a lot of chances and then things get really toxic and then they're more dramatic than they needed to be. But anyway, so we're watching this. And my mother's laying in her bed and she's feeling very sick. One eye open, half watching. I'm, you know, half alive, watching in the chair next to her. We've been waiting to see a doctor for like 6 hours. American healthcare, don't get me started. So we're laying there and we're watching this. And these young men are hitting on the new Aussie stew. And her name is Paris. And they're laying it on thick. And this one kid, he couldn't have less game, right? He has so little game that his idea of flirting with her is like telling her she has salad in her teeth. He was just fail whaling it left and right, not doing great. So he saunters off. And I don't know if that was Kyle or Dylan. I'm not sure because I haven't been watching the whole season. I've only seen two episodes. And they're out there wearing backwards hats and sunglasses. I'm like, couldn't tell you apart in a lineup if my life depended on it. But I think it was Kyle. You'll tell me. But then Ben walks up, okay, and Ben's got swagger. And Ben walks up and he sits down and he's like totally different energy. And he reaches out and he touches her knee. And from a silent vertical position, my mother yells out, "Mira." I laughed so hard for so long that she was just shocked by his forwardness. But yeah, Ben's got swagger. He came in like Rico Suave. He really did. So we got a crash course in Below Deck. The chef seems to be struggling a bit. Didn't really make a lot of food that the guests enjoyed. Had some issues following the preference sheets, but seems like a nice guy. I don't know what to think of the captain yet. I like him, but I can't tell if he's a sweet guy, you know, like Captain Lee, you know, a soft center, or if he's a harsh guy. I'm not sure yet. And I love Fraser. I think he's just the top of his game. He's so good at what he does. And I just love watching him work and his sense of humor. It's just amazing. So Below Deck is such a gem of a show. It really is. You get to see people's true colors when they're under stress and they're working. And I can't think of another show like it on Bravo. I think that's why it's one of their most popular shows. It doesn't get stale. The cast is always moving. The location is moving. You're having to deal with engineering issues, issues of a giant, you know, luxury yacht. It's a working vessel at sea. It's fascinating in so many ways. And then there's also all the young people on board that work so hard all day and then just want to bump uglies and get sauced at night. It is kind of crazy, though, that it used to just be traditional Below Deck and then Below Deck Med and then Below Deck Down Under. And now there's Below Deck Adventure. There's Below Deck Sailing Yacht. There's five or six Below Deck spinoffs. And I sometimes get frustrated because I cannot watch all of the Below Decks. And I love them. I love me some Below Decks. And I do think that there should be more crossover. I remember when Cynthia from Atlanta and her daughter went on Below Deck. I remember when Jesus Jugs went on Below Deck. There have been a lot of Bravo loves who randomly, I think on their own, with their own crew of friends, decide like, yeah, we've got, you know, I can't remember how much it is to go on Below Deck. I want to say $70,000 for 2 or 3 days. And then they expect you to tip because that's a discounted rate. I looked into this at one point and they give you a discounted rate because you're going to be on TV. So you sign away all, you know, photo release forms and audio, and then you have to tip as if you had paid the actual full charter cost, or you're supposed to anyway. And I remember being so impressed by Noelle, Cynthia's daughter. She was so much younger. I think she was in high school. And I remember she cried because she just felt so thankful and special by how the people working on the boat just took such good care of them. And they had such a good week or however many days they were on there. It was a really good episode. All that to say, I think they should do more crossovers of random Bravo loves and their friends or family going on Below Deck. I don't think I've ever seen a bad episode where they took someone from another Bravo show and put them on a boat. Now let's get into the valley, shall we? Hot Mess Express. Oh, before we do that, I saw something. They were celebrating Cruz's third birthday. They, as in Brittany and Jax, and there's video of this all over the interwebs. He leans on the table and he's blowing out the candles while Brittany is holding Cruz. Jax leans on the table so hard. He's a tall, beefy, probably very heavy, dense human. And he leans on the table and the whole table collapses and the cake goes flying down onto the floor. It felt staged. There's something about the VPR cast and spinoffs that just feels like they will do anything for a click or attention. And so it's hard for me to trust. It's hard for me to trust. And it felt like it was something that they planned. Why would you lean on a folding table that hard? There's nothing else on the table. She didn't have a look of like shock on her face. Maybe it was a real moment. Maybe it was, but my instinct is that it was staged. All right, let's get into it. The Valley. Episode 4 picks up where episode 3 left off. The dinner party fight, where it is coming to blows that the Lallys are telling Kristen she's a liar and she needs to apologize for starting the dirty, dirty rumor that the Lally wife, Michelle, is a Republican and racist. And you got to kind of like walk it back for a second, because what actually happened, as if you remember, is that Kristen said that she heard someone saying that about Michelle. See, what I'm about to say is the kind of memory test that I want someone to give me when I'm old. Don't ask me what year it is. Ask me, what exactly did Kristen say about Michelle Lally? And I'll say, okay, here's what it was. She said that Zach told her that Jasmine told him that Janet told Jasmine that Michelle had been supporting the don't say gay laws, which are horrible, and that because of that, Janet was giving Jasmine a heads up to be wary around this person because she might be Republican and racist. That's what Kristen is saying. And my home care nurse would check her notes and say, the old lady still got it. That's how the episode went down. Now, Janet, her side of the story is that she heard Michelle supporting the don't say gay laws because something about them came up when they were out at lunch and Michelle said, those laws protect children. After hearing that, Janet went to Jasmine, who has now, in the last episode, said that she is bisexual. And she said to Jasmine, hey, if you have an opportunity to talk to her about this subject matter, it sounds like maybe she could use your perspective type of situation. So Janet's story is one of compassion and understanding and care and trying to get Jasmine to try to reach their friend Michelle about a topic where she felt like Michelle was going in a harmful direction. And Kristen's is like dirty gossip behind the scenes. And the Lallys, I gotta say, have successfully changed the narrative to, you're so terrible, Kristen, for saying, you know, the R word times two, R squared. And then nobody's talking about Michelle actually supporting the don't say gay stuff. Now, if they never talk about that, if it never comes up, then we'll know that this show is not good because they have an opportunity here to discuss that. And if they instead flip it and make it about other things and completely distract from the origin of why this all happened, then all y'all fake and you're not the super cool show that we thought you were going to be. And thankfully, the gummy has kicked in. Before I get into more pretty terrible behavior from Jesse at this dinner, because in his attempts, repeated attempts to be a valiant white knight for his wife, Michelle, and come to her defense, he is being very rude to Michelle and others. At one point, he threw his hand in the last episode, threw his hand up in Michelle's face when she was about to speak. He's like, Michelle? And then he keeps speaking. Now, sure, maybe we could cut him some slack, but we've seen enough. We've seen enough other things from Jesse that this helps to paint a whole picture. Now, Michelle does have a couple moments where she's got some soliloquies. She's going off. She's saying that, Kristen, nobody feels sorry for you because you want to be the victim. Now you've made me a victim. I am Mexican. I am Persian. For you to say that I'm racist is terrible. And Kristen does apologize many, many times. She says, I'm sorry a lot. She's like, I'm sorry I ever said it. I'm sorry I put you in the situation. I'm sorry that I ever opened my mouth. Blah, blah, blah. It goes on and on and on. But no one is interested. Everyone is too upset. Everyone has decided that she's the villain for bringing this up. And Jesse goes too far. He really does. He's like, you need to grow up a little bit. He starts giving her an overall synopsis of what he thinks about her, just psychologically. He's like, you need to grow up. You're talking about having children. So by now, Kristen's man, Luke, he's over it. He's like, this is stupid. We're out of here. And I agree. Like, you don't need to start telling her that you don't think that she would be, you know, that she's ready to have children because of, I mean, were you? How you doing? Grabbed her nipple two episodes ago, so let's all chill out. And I did enjoy that in that moment, Jack stood up and said, hey, we're all attacking one person here. That isn't cool to do. And that was nice of him. But it just doesn't go well for Kristen because Jasmine and Zach are completely against her. I mean, while this is all happening, at one point she had turned to Zach and said, this is all because of you. And he's like, so there's a big divide now, a big divide, because this all started from Zach confiding in her about something Jasmine said. So it's real bad for them. And at one point they're like laughing at her and mocking her because she's trying to yell at them for bringing up racist stuff. And they're like, you're the one who said it on camera. And they finally, Luke's just like, we're leaving. And Jack says to the camera, that he thinks Janet is a silent killer. Interesting. Because now the stories are very different and we may never know what really happened. We may never know what Janet really expressed to Jasmine. Was it something totally loving and helpful, or was it like, hey, yo, our girl's a racist and a Republican? We don't know. We can't know. But people get crazy in these situations and they're calling Kristen crazy. And then Michelle stands up and she's like, yelling now at this point. She's like, you need to tell everyone that that didn't happen and you're a liar. I'm like, well, hold on now. Hold on now. But it did happen. So now you're wanting her to deny that Zach ever talked to her, but Zach admitted to talking to her. So what are we asking her to do? And so Kristen's like, you want me to lie that it didn't happen? It just started moving in really illogical directions. And Jax is really trying to play mediator here, which was so interesting to see. So Kristen and Luke still haven't left. They're like, we're leaving, but no one ever leaves. And so they're just in the kitchen kind of consoling each other. And Jax is there and he's like, you're not going to win this with everybody, obviously. But if Zach is lying, call him out for lying. Don't let up. Now, Nia, the one with three babies and the husband named Danny, she's like, our Uber's here. We have a babysitter. We got to go. And he at one point jumps in and was kind of like trying to help and get into it. And she was like, no, no. She gave him like serious, you know, that serious spouse face where you're just like, no, we're not doing this. And she shut it down. And so I think she was very smart to just take them out of this whole equation. So then Brittany facilitates a sit down face to face between Zach and Kristen on the side patio of this, again, multi-million dollar, $18 million home that they're trying to sell. So it's like, can you picture yourself having a fight here? Well, now you can. Where would you confront someone face to face? This balcony looks nice, right behind the banana trees. So Kristen sits down, purse on her forearm, drink in the other hand, and she's doing the deep voice, half cry deep voice. If you know, you know. She's like, I am so disappointed in you. I don't even know you. So she says that. He doesn't say anything. She goes back to it. I understand that it hurt a lot of people, but I'm not a liar. And she's getting stronger as we go through it, you know? But then Zach starts and he's got his finger in the air. And I turn and see that Luke is there. Luke is right next to Zach because I keep forgetting that Zach didn't just tell Kristen this. He told Kristen and Luke this. Zach, you got to give it up. You got two people, not just one. You can't tell them that to their face that they're both lying here. What's important when Zach starts talking is that he doesn't deny what Kristen has just said. He just says, you are trying to take zero responsibility, saying that he is taking responsibility for saying things to her, as he says he admitted on camera, which he did. In the last episode, she met up with Brittany over there, whatever they were having, smoothies and was it tater tots? It was something that I thought looked good. Churros! Anyway, over their tea and churros, they called him on speakerphone and he admitted that he said things to her. So he's like, what are you talking about? I'm saying, yes, I did say that. But the issue here is that Michelle Lally stood up and said, deny, deny, deny that you ever said any of that, that you're say the own that you're a liar. That never happened. And Zach confirmed that the Republican thing was said, but he said that does not mean racism necessarily. And Zach goes on, and the energy is so odd because he's talking to her like he's fighting with her, but he's confirming a lot of things that she was saying. He's like, yep, that did happen. Yep, that did happen. I've taken responsibility for my part in it. You're trying to get out of all responsibility for your part of it. And yes, we all talked crap about each other behind each other's backs, but what was that at the table? And then we start to realize that Zach is now mad at Janet. He says, you didn't even go after Janet. You came after me. You steamrolled me. Janet's the one that said it. So this is all, people are just going to turn and point fingers. It's the Spider-Man meme. And the origin is the thing nobody wants to talk about, which is Michelle allegedly supporting the Don't Say Gay bills. Around and around we go. Now, as Kristen and Zach and Luke are talking, we see Janet is sidled up with like kind of by a door and she's heard almost all of this. And I'm like, ooh, Janet. And so then she comes walking in and Zach's like, I think you should say to Janet what you just said to me. And Kristen's like, I don't think Janet wants to hear about it. She's trying to protect a baby right now. And Janet sits down and she's like, since when do you care about that? Ooh. And I think Kristen was truly hurt by that. She gets a look on her face that I think she's really very upset that Janet just said that to her, because this woman is, Kristen is actively trying to be pregnant. She's very supportive of her friends who have had babies. And the first thing she thinks of is like, don't involve Janet in this. She's, you know, pregnant. Let's not try to upset her. And Janet's mean to her about that. So I was team Kristen in that moment. And she wasn't lying. So this is just all misplaced anger. She's just going to get crap for this, I think, the whole season. Did she start a bunch of stuff? She absolutely did, in the worst way possible, started a bunch of stuff. But now going back and seeing it, I'm like, but she was just repeating. She did it in the wildest way. Like, there was no reason to even bring that up in that moment. I don't think anyone will ever understand her train of thought of like, I'm fighting with this person about this one thing, so I'm going to bring this other thing up randomly. And that's the glory of whatever makes these people good for TV. But it doesn't seem like she was lying. And as she's looks like she's about to cry and walking away after Janet said that, Janet then starts to lay into her. And she's like, you put words in my mouth that weren't true. And Kristen says, it's what was told to me. And Janet's response is, it's causing me stress. And now everyone is there. Michelle is there, like everyone. Janet's husband, the whole crew is just now standing in a circle watching this. And Janet's like, I need some space right now. And Kristen's like, yeah, I do too. And there was a moment in the middle where Janet's husband, the lawyer, was trying to talk logically. And Zach's like, I'm getting so turned on right now. I'm like, Zach, not the time. This is a Wendy's. Now, the next scene, we are at Jax and Brittany's house, and it's about Cruz. They're going to have someone come over to work with him because he's verbally, they're saying that he has regressed, that he was doing great in all areas, and that one day, of course, is what happened when he was 2, because he just now turned 3, that he just stopped talking. And he is such a cute little boy, and they show him hugging Brittany, and I think to myself, that's true. I have never heard him speak. And for anyone out there who is around small children, raising a small child, they talk a lot all day. And I have never heard Cruz's voice. All the other little kids on the show, we've seen them and we've heard them. So Brittany says that they are putting him in speech therapy. Now, what's upsetting is that Jax went on Twitter, the artist formerly known as Twitter, and he posted, I think it was the day of this episode airing or the day after, he said, quote, my son crawled early, walked early, and even spoke early, .. Then we got him vaccinated and it all stopped. I am not saying vaccines are the cause, but what else could it be? How can kid be talking fully, walking fully, then stop 2 weeks after vaccinations? Now, what we're not going to do is have another resurgence of the Jenny McCarthyism that caused a lot of people to stop vaccinating their kids. If you're listening to this and this makes you mad and you're upset, this whole vilification of vaccines, it was a bogus study that was done. Started with a man, per usual, named Andrew Wakefield. It was a fraudulent 1998 paper. Please look into that. I do not want to see Jax carrying that torch, that false torch forward any farther and putting us any more at risk than that movement already did. So I hope that whatever Cruz is dealing with, that they find whatever it is and find a way to support him, and that Jax doesn't go any further into conspiracy theories about health. Before we even think about it, don't do it. I'm not saying that nobody ever has any adverse reactions to vaccines. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying for yet another generation of parents to say that childhood vaccines that prevent horrible diseases like polio, whatever, that those are to blame for any regression or learning disabilities or anything at all that happens. Jenny McCarthy's case, she blamed it on autism. That has to stop. A lot of parents are scared, were scared for a long time about giving their children any vaccines, and we've seen a resurgence of all kinds of preventable diseases that cause a lot of pain. And it's easy to scare parents. It is the scariest job in the entire world. It's understandable. So if you have questions about it, ask your pediatrician. I'll never forget taking a small child to the pediatrician and them saying, oh yeah, no, we got to make sure that they get their chicken pox vaccine. And I said, what? You have a vaccine for chicken pox now? And they're like, oh yeah, nobody gets chicken pox anymore. No one gets chicken pox anymore. Do you know how groundbreaking that is? I remember, I have vivid memories of being 2 years old, crying, unable to sleep, screaming, scratching at my face and my chest and my back and just itching all over my body, writhing from it, having chicken pox so bad, so bad. And then my OGs, my longtime followers, remember when I had shingles. I got shingles from stress. I thought only old people could get shingles. Nope. Nope. If you have had chicken pox, the shingles virus lives dormant in your body because it is all part of the herpes family, which I also didn't know. Things you learn the hard way when a doctor is looking at your butt under bright light and they say, that looks herpetic. And you say, what did you just say to me? But these are things that our children now will never have to deal with. They will never have to scratch and cry at chickenpox, and they'll never have to go through the absolutely hellish torture that is shingles or getting the shingles vaccine. It's just gone, poof. And that's the magic of vaccines. Now back to things that Jax should be concerned about. Brittany says to him, Mom's only here for the month and then she's gone. Where's my date night? You're supposed to be taking me on. Where's my romantic night? And Jax says things are just a little busy right now, and he blames the bar. Even though in the episode we were shown the bar, he said bars can be kryptonite or whatever for your marriage, and that's not going to happen here. Well, we're watching it. And Brittany kind of giggles it off, but you can tell it bothers her. And in a confessional, she talks about how it was when they first met. And Brittany and Jesse, again, it is never going to be like the first few months of when you first meet someone. That's why everybody's excited for people when they start dating in the first few months, first year. We're all thrilled for them. Taylor and Travis, oh my God, live it up. But she reminisces and she talks about how often they used to do it and how crazy they were. And now she says they've maybe had sex twice in the last year, which I was surprised that she was willing to say that on camera, because Jax and his ego and liking to be the number one guy in the group, I don't think he's going to like that very much. And she rubs it in too. She's like, you know, like a tumbleweed, like you're watching an old Western, you see a tumbleweed. I'm like a tumbleweed rolling around. I'm like, geez, Louise, Brittany. She also could have made a dry joke, but she didn't. Mm-mm-mm. Missed opportunity. Now the speech therapist gets there. And they have a dog, and I think the dog's name is Monroe. It's a small dog. And again, the gummy is hit. So I'm watching this, and the dog is losing its mind. The dog is barking a shrill bark, and the dog won't stop. And the woman's saying, hello, and she's walking in, the dog's still barking. She's walking into the living room, and the dog is still barking. And I was like, can we put the dog outside? And then this whole part I found absolutely heartbreaking. Very difficult to watch. I teared up a lot. It's so hard to be a parent. It really is, as many of us know. And the speech therapist is on the ground with Cruz, showing him things and trying to get him to engage. And Brittany is just watching in the pained, hopeful look on her face. I could cry right now. It's so difficult. She's just trying to do everything. They are trying to do everything that they can do to help their son. And this woman is here. And Brittany says in a confessional that it's so hard to watch your child, essentially for things to go slightly different for them than you had planned or wanted, and that there is a lot of pressure in being a mom. Yes, there is. And Jax admits that he has committed the cardinal parenting sin of comparing Cruz to other kids and their milestones. And that's never going to lead anywhere good. And at one point, the little boy, the woman asks him, do you want to play with this? Do you want to do this more? And he says the word more. And it takes him a long time to get the word out. And they're just so excited for him that he says more. Brittany runs over and gives him, you know, a big hug and a kiss. Very heartbreaking, the entire scene. And people are being really, really rough on Jax for his tweet about the vaccinations. as a parent, you can absolutely understand why your mind would want to think that and believe that if your child is facing any kind of developmental issue that shows up between the time they're born and the time that they get their vaccines completed. Now, if you want to hear my conspiracy theories, I am more in the camp of environmental toxins and PFAS and phthalates and things like that that have entered our environment. And I wonder about those kind of exposures that have skyrocketed over the past, 20 years. Because vaccines have been around for a long time, but our man-made pollutants and chemicals and all these horrible things that we're exposing ourselves to. So it's sad to see them dealing with this at all. Now brace yourselves, because the next scene is the Lallys, Jesse and Michelle. And Michelle is telling Jesse that Kristen sent her a text message the day after the dinner party from hell. Welcome, the Valley, to the Bravo franchise of shows where any dinner party you have is going to end that way. Anyway, Kristen sent Michelle a text that says, "Don't worry, your secrets are safe with me. I'm not going to retaliate for the sake of my mental health." Michelle says to Jesse that she doesn't know what secrets Kristen could be talking about. I think Michelle does know. I think she confided something in Kristen. And Kristen's now saying, like, "I'm not going to burn you. I'm not going to tell your secrets," which is nice of Kristen, but you really shouldn't have to say it. Then Jesse starts going off about how turned on he was at Michelle yelling and standing up and her chair flying away. And if she was that assertive in the bedroom, they would have 6 children. And we formally welcome Jesse into the Bravosphere Boyhood Club of how can I make this about my dick? And Michelle laughs and she says, "Jesse and I, we haven't laughed like this in years." In a weird way, Kristen has brought us together. Miss Lally, question in the back. Yep, me with my hand up. Good. So did you openly say that you supported the Don't Say Gay bills or nah? What was that about? What's the origin of this thing? Oh, we're not going to talk about it. Okay, sweet. Moving on. Now we're at Janet's house and she's cooking dinner despite being pregnant. And she's talking to her lawyer husband. And she's talking about how Kristen kept saying, I think she must have said it 3 times, that she has always protected Michelle. Like, why would I want to hurt Michelle? I've always protected Michelle, kind of a thing. And so she's talking about it. And then at the same time, we've cut to Brittany, who's also talking about it and saying how Kristen had mentioned, "I could ruin people, but I'm not going to for my own sanity," which ties into her texting Michelle saying, "Don't worry, your secrets are safe with me. I'm not going to retaliate for my own mental health." Yikes. So Janet's the first person to say out loud, "It sounds like Kristen has something on Michelle that she could threaten her with." Yes. Yes, it does, Janet. Now they sit down to eat, and Janet has made some delicious-looking cheeseburgers. But they're still talking about the Kristen situation. I'm like, that burger's not going to destroy itself. What are we doing here? We have more important things to do. And speaking of that, then Janet starts talking about how she has more important things to do than Kristen, and she's got to do the nursery and da-da-da and this and that. And also, she's planning a gala for something called Be the Match. And it is about matching people up to donate bone marrow or blood stem cells with people who are in need. And it's a registry that you can join and kind of put your health information up there so that if you match with somebody, then you can help save them. It's pretty great. And Janet says she used to be a personal assistant, so you have to be pretty on it and you have to be very detail-oriented, and that she's helping to organize this Be the Match gala through her best friend, who she says is Jared Lips, and that he got her connected with Be the Match, and that Jared found his match for stem cells and his life was saved because of Be the Match. And Jared is friends, I think, with a lot of them, because she says that he's known Kristen longer, but he's been getting text messages from Kristen about the seating chart and some behind the scenes footage of them talking about the seating chart over a lunch with Brittany. And so I'm sure there's going to be some drama at this event, because Kristen's probably trying to make sure she's not seated near Janet. And Janet is saying how important this event is, and she's not going to allow any drama at this event. We jump to Kristen and Luke, and she's talking about what's she going to wear, and Janet is probably controlling everywhere everybody's going to sit and da-da-da. And we learn that Kristen and Luke and Zach are now tight because she says that she and Zach realized that they were pawns and that Janet is the one that started all of this, is the one that people should be having issues with for talking crap in the first place. And I immediately wonder where Jasmine stands on it, because it seemed like Jasmine and Zach were a tight, united front on it. Like, Kristen's ridiculous. But now, if Zach has switched over to alliance with Kristen, where is Jasmine? And Kristen and Luke are really commiserating about how they're over this group of people. And Luke is like, it's all right. Hey, you know, babe, I'm ready to blow this pop stand whenever and just go to Colorado. Like, you need to be happy. You need to be chill so you can get pregnant. We can have a happy, healthy baby. Like, he's into it. It's like, just go then. Go to Colorado. You got your 70 acres or whatever. Like, why are you doing this if this is going to, you know, make you crazy and destroy you at a time when you're trying to have a baby? I agree. Now, in the next scene, we've got the bros, the dad bros, on an outing with their small children. So it's Danny, and I think he only has one of the babies, not two, the older, you know, toddler. And then Jesse, Hesse, with his child, Isabella, I believe that's right, memory recall, and then Jackson Cruz. So there's three small kids and three bros, and they're driving a minivan that Danny is test driving. And so we have our expected slow-mo, three guys pushing their strollers, you know, trying to look cool with their backwards hats. Everyone has a backwards hat now, except for Danny, because he's got some sense. They lament their relationships. Jax is saying there's no spark between him and Brittany, and he blames himself. And Jesse's talking about how their therapy session went. And then Jax and Jesse probably play one of their favorite recent games, which is, remember how much we used to have sex? Let's talk about how we don't have it anymore. And let's talk about how our wives used to act and what they used to wear and how we used to pour hot wax on them. That's what Jesse does anyway. She used to come over and be in a trench coat and I'd pour hot wax on her back. And now I can't even wear it. And poor Danny, with his healthy relationship, he's like, well, you know, things change, man, and you just got to roll with it. And Jack's like, I don't want things to change. I used to have sex 3-4 times a day. It still wasn't enough. And now it's like, blah, blah, blah. Did we even have sex this month? Now, on the flip side of the coin, we go back out to dinner with Luke and Kristen, and they go to a restaurant called Soulmate. So we know they're getting their dinner for free. And Kristen has a dirty martini, and they cheers to, Luke says, making babies. And their conversation is about going to Colorado. And Luke's saying that he has a good group of people there that he prefers. And he's been setting up his entire life to culminate in whatever he's doing in Colorado that I'm still not sure of. But they're planning a trip for the fall. And then he's eating a ton of oysters so that he can go rounds 3 and 4 tonight. And I would like to hear less about that. But no one cares what I want, because the next line out of Kristen's mouth is about how the group is either intimidated by or wants nothing to do with a really hot, quote, really hot, giant penis 32-year-old. But they're just getting started, y'all. They're just getting started. Because then they start talking about how they're going to go home and they're going to have sex and then smoke weed and then have some sex and then have some more sex. And he says, as long as I can get 10 minutes in between, can we get 10 minutes in between? Can I get 10 seconds in between this talk? And Bravo knows when it's been too much for too long. So they move the spotlight over to Danny and Nia, but then it ends up being about Luke and Kristen, about how Danny has a bunch of flowers because Luke asked him to help make a romantic evening for Kristen. And then, boom, they shoot us back over to the lascivious Kristen and Luke date. And they're having their usual discussion between Colorado, California, Colorado, California. I don't want to live in Colorado. I don't want to live in California. And Kristen just saying she wants to stay put for a year or two to see how well the valley does. Just kidding, she says, because she moved 3 times in a year and a half and she needs a minute. Then we cut to Danny has met up with Brittany. And these two people go into Luke and Kristen's apartment, and they're setting it up, making it look really nice. They have rose petals. They're doing, I think, a massage table. And she's also commenting while they're setting up this extremely romantic evening that she wishes Jax would think about doing anything like that for her, anything nice for her, romantic for her. And then they get the call that they're 5 minutes away. So they scatter rose petals. They have little, you know, like the battery operated candles. And there's a dog in there that I thought was so interesting. The dog's name is Jill. It's a big old German shepherd with a very loud bark, but the dog's name is Jill. And I just really enjoy when dogs have people names. And now finally, at this juncture of the episode, we are at the gala. People are in the car driving. It is Janet and her lawyer husband, whose name I'm blanking on. I'm not going to look it up. And Brittany and Jax. And they're deciding how much money they're going to spend / donate. And Janet has a budget of $2,500. And Jax is very concerned with Brittany spending any more than $2,000 and is very upset when Janet says, come on, at least match my $2,500. So that's interesting from a man who is making $500,000 a year or more from his cameos. And again, it is not what you make, it is what you save. And then Jax, as they're entering the venue, says that he needs some hors d'oeuvres because his drink has hit. And someone points out to him that you don't pronounce the H, and I will never forgive them because you just let that ride. That's just entertain. It's free entertainment for everyone forever, but fine. Maybe he didn't hear him is what I tell myself, and he'll keep pronouncing the H. As people are arriving at the gala, people are having fun, you know, commenting on what they're wearing. So we see the Lallys pull up and they show him in slow-mo getting out of the vehicle because, first of all, let me just say, I think Michelle's dress and hair choices are so amazing that I yelled. I was like, move, because he stood in the way and I couldn't see her dress. It's belted. I love a belt. You know, like the bathing suits that have a belt or a dress, the form-fitting dress that has a belt. I don't know why I like it so much. I think it's because I don't really have a waist. I'm kind of built like a frog. So I love seeing like a little waisty waist and a belt on it. I'm not, but you know what I mean. I feel like that. So I love a waist accentuating belt. But Jesse keeps being in the way, and he's got a jacket on that reminds me of an outfit that Erica Jane wore back when she thought she had money, where it was like this hat. It was a big, wide-brimmed hat, and it looked like someone took a giant marker and colored it in, but did a half-assed job where it's only just like a scribble-scrabble, and the jacket has a scribble-scrabbles all over it. That's what his jacket looks like, scribble-scrabbles. And he's very proud of it. I'm sure he's like, it's called fashion. And everyone else is like, what are you wearing? But not even that could distract me from just how good Michelle looked. Her hair, she's doing like a naturally wavy thing. Michelle, always wear it like that. I'm throwing that out into the universe. It looks so good. And then with this dress, oh. And as everyone is waiting for Kristen and Luke to show up, I get my answer to where does Jasmine stand. Jasmine is no friend to Kristen. And watching her talk to Zach, I'm like, I don't think Zach really is either. I think Kristen thinks that Zach is teamed up with her v. Janet. But Jasmine was saying like, oh, well, Kristen's not seating near us and that's a shame. And, you know, I could put on the pretend face and like bless your heart and whatever. I'm like, okay, all right. And Zach's like, yeah, no, me too. So it doesn't seem genuine. And I know Bravo people, when they're putting these together, they know where our minds are going, because then the very next scene is Jasmine in a confessional saying, I don't know if Kristen's going to start something tonight. You just never know with her. So Kristen gets to the gala alone. Luke is not with her. And as she hugs someone, she's like, oh, Jill is super sick. Now, see, if I wasn't paying attention, if we weren't paying attention, we'd be like, who the hell is Jill? But we know it's the dog. The dog is sick. She's telling everyone the dog has diarrhea. Poor Jill. All her business aired out at the gala. Anyway, she probably ate some rose petals. And then Brittany asked her the exact question I had written down, which is, did she eat some of the flowers? And she's like, no, no, no. Jill has had diarrhea so many times. Yada, yada. Poor Jill. Jill and her IBS blasted all over the valley. Now, at the event, when they're all seated at their round tables of 10, I believe, and they're eating their little dinner and they're getting ready to participate in this event, Zach turns to Michelle and he says, I didn't get a chance to apologize for my part in telling Kristen things that I knew. And then Michelle, in a confessional, says she's sure there was some kind of conversation between Janet, Jasmine, and Zach, but they never brought it up to everybody. So her beef is that Kristen put it on camera, brought it up to everybody, and we still don't know whether what Janet's original concern was about the don't say gay support has any merit. No one will discuss it. So Zach then turns to Jesse, and he's really working it. He's like a lobbyist. He's going hard at his table. Now, Kristen's at a different table, having a great time with Jackson Brittany. But at his table, Zach is trying to convince Jesse and Michelle to tell Kristen that all is well and we're moving on. And he says, I think she will apologize to you if that's what you want. She already did. She apologized like 5 times. She's apologized. What she said she won't do is pretend like the conversation didn't happen. What's the issue here? And in his confessional, Zach's like, as someone who cares about Kristen, I think it's my job to try to make the peace. And things are so, I'm like, but you're doing it wrong. You're telling these two she will apologize. She already did apologize. Everybody needs to move on if that's what they want to do. But what are these weird pretend games we're playing? It's so odd. All right, then back at the other table, the Lallys. People are asking them, how did they meet? What's their origin story? And Michelle says that they met in the daytime for a meeting because he had asked her out. They were supposed to go out on a formal date that night. She wanted to meet him first, talk to him, see if he was crazy or not. Kind of weird to say yes to a date before you've done that, but okay. So they meet in the daytime, and she says he talked about himself the entire time and never asked her one question. Wow. And she says because of that, she decided she was going to treat him essentially like as a fuckboy. So she like called him at midnight and was like, come over right now. So she was just going to have that kind of relationship with him. And in her confessional, she says, I knew he wasn't the right one, the one for me, but I was very attracted to him. And this is a lesson in going with your instincts. But she says she canceled their first date. So I don't know if that means that after she met him in the daytime, she was like, oh yeah, we were supposed to hang out later. I'm not going to do that anymore. The timeline's off there. I don't really understand that. But she says she went out with her girlfriends instead, and then she wanted a booty call. And so she texted him at midnight. And then he says, I walked in. I immediately took off her jean shorts, and we've been together ever since.
Gross.
Cut back to a confessional of Michelle, and she says, now I'm in the world's longest booty call. Then the gala is wrapping up and they announce that they've raised over $327,000, which is amazing. How wonderful. But Zach has not clocked out. He is on the clock. And so he's saying, can I just get you two together? I feel like the night has been amazing, but if I could just get you two together. And so he's trying to broker a face-to-face between the Lallys and Kristen, and everyone's got a margarita, and they all walk off. As Michelle and Jesse are outside waiting, I again say that the hair and dress choices are just off the charts. I'm in love with it. But Jesse is kind of like, an eye-rolly and like, huh. But Michelle's energy is, let's not make this worse. Let's try to make peace. So Kristen comes out with a very sad, sad look on her face and tells Michelle she loves her and gives her a hug. And again says that she feels badly for what has happened. And Kristen says, I said something that I should not have repeated. And that is where Michelle throws a flag. And she says, that's what we have an issue with, that you keep saying you repeated something. And everyone else is saying they never originally said what you are claiming. Now, Kristen, there's a really weird moment here where Kristen like gets flustered, I think. And she says like, and I mean, Jasmine, I think she calls Michelle Jasmine by mistake, or she's trying to describe a conversation she just had with Jasmine. Either way, I think Jesse standing right there believes that she just called his wife Jasmine, and he loses it. He's like, oh my God. And he starts yelling and walks off and opens the door of the building and goes in and is just yelling. He's irritated that she has called his wife Jasmine. Like you can't even be bothered to remember his wife's name or the fact that she's bringing up or trying to make an excuse. I'm not sure what set him off, what's going through his mind, really. But Michelle has no reaction. She's just listening. So Kristen reiterates again, like, I did repeat something. I felt like after that dinner, not during the dinner when everybody was going after her, but after the dinner, she's saying people owned up, Zach, others, owned up to things that they did say that Kristen repeated. Now, I think the one word that everyone is denying is racism. The Republican part, Zach is owning. He's not saying that Janet said it, but he is kind of, he's saying that was said, but I've never heard him say whether or not he just said it or Janet said it. This is exhausting, isn't it? But either way, they're talking about that. And so Kristen will not say, oh yeah, I made that up. She's like, no, that is what I heard. And I repeated what I heard. And that is what I apologize for. And she just says that. And she and Michelle are just like locked eyes. And Michelle's not getting the answer that she wanted. And Kristen is not willing to say that she somehow made the stuff up. And then Jesse comes walking back in. And as he's walking back in, Kristen's like, I know that you know me. And I know that you know that I'm being honest. And I know that you know that I'm sorry. And Michelle says, I know that you need some help. Ooh. We cut to Zach, who has his trademarked finger touching brow, eyes wide open look. Poor Kristen. Poor Kristen is staying there choked up. And she says, I've been going to therapy for like 9 years. So yeah. And in a confessional, Michelle says, I don't believe anything she says. She says that she can coexist with Kristen, but that's as far as it's going to go. So they are not friends anymore. And Kristen's love for Michelle is unrequited. But Zach's not done. As Kristen is trying to walk inside, he says, well, do you and Jesse maybe want to talk? Jesse is standing there in his jacket that looks like people tested swatches or tried to clean paintbrushes before they put them away in storage. And his arms are folded and he's leaning on one leg and he's got a pouty, 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 pouty little face on. And that is not the kind of person you want to have a conversation with. But Kristen does it. Kristen does it. She is trying her best to make amends. And I am seeing that she is trying. She says, Jesse, I'm so sorry. You know, as you know, this is your wife and I feel terrible about what has happened, that I hurt her, that I disrespected her. There's some paraphrasing here, but you get it. But Jesse, he says, let me ask you something. Is it worth it to continue to do this shit over and over and over again? And Kristen's like, what? What stuff are you talking about? And he's like, to make comments and be involved and just all of this stressing. Like, I'm very stressed out. We're all very stressed out. And I'm like, well, you could be saying the same thing to Zach. You could be saying the same thing to Janet. But yes, Kristen is the one who brought this up on camera. And in a moment that the Countess Luann would appreciate and approve of, Jesse says, you guys just don't be in the middle of everything. Just be cool. And then I really enjoyed this part. We have Jesse on a couch with his arm thrown on the back of the couch. And he says, I mean, look, I'm an adult with a child, with a career, with a wife, not for long, with a million other problems. Can we just move on? And it's like, yeah, absolutely. We can all move on. Also, did Michelle say that she supported the don't say gay bills or what? And the Lallys walk away to go get a drink at the bar and they give them slow-mo walk away mode. And Kristen is just crying. She's just very upset. And Zach is trying to tell her he thinks that went well. I don't think that it did go well. And then they show previews for the following week where all the menfolk are together with their kids. And Jax is going to eat a burger that a bunch of flies have been on. And I don't flinch because that makes sense. And then they show that there's going to be a girls' night. And the weirdest thing happens. Everyone is saying, Michelle, if she has to poop when she's on vacation with her husband, will go down to the lobby and poop there. And Michelle says, no, I don't poop in front of him. No, that's gross. That's the way doors were created. Are you kidding me right now? Do you not? She probably doesn't even toot in front of her husband. What? That man doesn't even know you. What kind of a weird house is that? Are you walking around with your little butt clenched tight? Live! He should be honored to be crop dusted by a woman like Michelle. He should be honored to light a match after she drops one in the bathroom. You know what I mean? We all do it. We're just these upright, weird, hairy mammals, and we all gotta poop, Michelle. I bet you smell his all the time. I bet he doesn't care if he drops a stanky load near you. That makes me so mad when I see women walking on eggshells about their poops and toots. Then my emotions swung in a completely different direction because our sweet, beautiful, lovely Nia is seen crying. They just cut to her crying, talking about how she thought at first she had baby blues and she's not sure how to be okay, even though she's not really okay. And she thinks she's thinking she might have PPD. That's what I'm thinking watching it. I don't understand. Or maybe she's talking about something that happened in the past, because the very last thing we see is Danny saying to her while she's crying and wiping a tear that she had high functioning depression. That's so hard to watch as somebody who had terrible PPD, and I've known many people who've had it. It's a horrible, horrible situation. And I would be surprised if she didn't, because having that many kids in that short of an amount of time, your body is just flooded with hormones. Really, really hard to watch. I hope that she does get support. I hope that that's where her storyline is going, if she feels that way, if she feels that sadness. But that was that episode of The Valley. Took us in all different directions. I'm over an hour, and you know I hate to do that. It's a solid hour. It's an hour of power. Not one ad. I mean, enjoy these glory days. Not one plug of a home delivery food service or dog food or anything. Next pod will drop on Thursday. Like and subscribe. But whatever you do, don't be like Michelle. Don't accidentally marry your booty call.